is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Scientists and weather forecasters are worried about the next big El Nino. That is when Earth jumps up in heating, like in the 1997-98 heat and 2012, the record years. Did you know they also predict more El Niños than we have seen, and stronger extremes? That will play out in heat waves, wildfires, droughts, and big storms. But there's another hidden place of impacts, Antarctica. From those massive polar glaciers to giant ice shelves breaking off, expect more sea level rise sooner than they told you. Naturally, the neighbors are looking into it. Our guest is Dr. Ariane Puric, and she's in the thick of Australian research about the Southern Ocean and Antarctica. At Monash University in Melbourne, she is a postdoctoral research fellow at the School of Earth, Atmosphere and Environment. She is also part of the Australian Research Council's special initiative called Securing Antarctica's Environmental Future. Ariane is co-author of a new paper finding El Niño events could change Antarctic sea ice and speed sea level rise around the world. From Melbourne, Ariane Puric, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Alex, thanks very much for having me today.
Most media is in the Northern Hemisphere, as you know. Most humans live there. Hardly anyone spends time on the rough seas of the Southern Ocean. So we don't hear a lot about it. And yet, some scientists think the Southern Ocean is a huge factor in the future world climate. What do you think?
The Southern Ocean does play a really important role in climate, and it has a really important role for a number of different reasons. So the Southern Ocean is a relatively small ocean. It's not as big as the Pacific Ocean, for example, which you might be more familiar with. But it's unique in the global oceans because it's sort of uninterrupted by continents. So it goes, you know, from south of Australia and it flows around south of South America and around south of Africa. So it flows all around Antarctica. And the circumpolar nature of the ocean means it has certain circulation characteristics. And the Southern Ocean actually takes up a huge amount of heat and carbon from the atmosphere. And so this means that it's sort of moderating global warming by taking up heat and carbon from the atmosphere into the ocean. So that's one of the reasons why the Southern Ocean is really important. Another reason is that Antarctica has a huge amount of ice frozen up on the continent. Over the Antarctic continent, there's about 4 kilometres of ice. And if this ice was to melt, it could raise global sea levels by tens of metres over sort of many centuries. Now, we're not expecting to see that sort of level of sea level rise over the 21st century, but we do expect to see some sea level rise. And this is where the Southern Ocean comes into play, because the Southern Ocean surrounds the Antarctic margins, and the temperature of this ocean interacts with the Antarctic ice shelves and can accelerate their melting, and it can increase the sea level rise. And so that's another reason why the Southern Ocean is really important in influencing sea levels, and these effects will be felt all around the globe. So they aren't limited to the Southern Hemisphere. Sea level rise will affect coastal communities globally.
Why don't we bite into your work with the Antarctic sea ice? It is in the news. CNN reports, quote, 90% of ice around Antarctica has disappeared in less than a decade. Now, they mean the ice in the sea, of course. And what is the current state of sea ice there?
Something that's very topical at the moment. It's been in the news quite a lot here in Australia. So Antarctic sea ice, as you say, it's different from the ice on the land, the frozen ocean water, but is also important because it plays a role in various components of the climate system as well. Surprisingly, for many decades, Antarctic sea ice was actually increasing, while in the Arctic, the sea ice has been decreasing for many decades, and that's quite well known. We see these iconic global warming pictures with the polar bear, and there's no sea ice, so the polar bear can't get any food. In the Southern Ocean, it's been quite different. So Antarctic sea ice was increasing for many decades, and then in 2016, a huge decline occurred. Basically, over the course of sort of 2 years, the amount of sea ice that had been lost in the Arctic over many decades was lost in the Antarctic. And then since 2016, Antarctic sea ice has remained low. And so at the summer minimum in sea ice coverage, we saw a record minimum last summer in 2022, And then in February this year, 2023, we've just seen another record minimum in Antarctic sea ice coverage. And this is quite concerning to us as climate scientists. The sea is really low sea ice. It can have implications to ice shelf stability. For the sea ice, when it's there, it can sort of dampen waves and protect the ice shelves from storm. And when it's not there, like it isn't at the moment, these ice shelves are more vulnerable to waves and storms breaking them up and carving icebergs. And the sea ice is also important in driving the deep ocean circulation. And this is an important component of how the Southern Ocean uptakes heat and carbon, like I mentioned earlier. And so the fact that this sea ice is much lower than it previously has been is something that's really alarming to a lot of climate scientists.
Well, in another aspect that we've been following here on the show, it's also a factor in the Earth energy imbalance, because when you lose vast amounts of sea ice, you lose the amount of sunlight that would have been reflected back into space. Scientists call it the albedo effect. Has anyone calculated the amount of new energy being added to the Earth system due to drastically lower sea ice in Antarctica?
I'm not quite sure about the energy balance of the surface per se, but you're absolutely right that the sea ice is highly reflective, and so when it's there, it reflects incoming solar radiation back out to space, and when it's not there, solar radiation is absorbed by the ocean. I'm not sure about the actual calculation, but it is another important component.
Well, it's possible that calculation or study hasn't been done yet, and it will be interesting to see if it does happen. We know that melting sea ice does not add to sea level rise. That water was already there in the sea, and then it froze. Yet your work points to serious indirect connections between disappearing sea ice and sea level rise. Could you talk about that?
There's three types of ice around Antarctica, as we've been discussing. The sea ice, which is frozen ocean water, and it freezes and melts each season. And this doesn't raise sea levels. It's like if you have your glass with ice cubes in it, the ice cubes can melt and your glass doesn't overflow. But the other two types of ice that's formed on land when snowfall over Antarctica is compressed. And so we have the ice that's still sitting on the land called the ice sheet, and then some of the ice sheet that has sort of slipped out over the ocean and is now floating over the ocean whilst still attached to the land as well, which is called the ice shelf. And the ice shelves also don't raise sea level themselves when they're not, because again, they're already floating on the ocean. But as the ice shelves melt, and they melt when they come into contact with warm ocean below them, and also when icebergs carve off them. As the ice shelves melt, they allow the land ice to slide into the ocean more quickly. The ice shelves form a buttressing support, a physical barrier to hold the land ice on the land. And when they're not there, the land ice slides into the ocean more quickly. And this is what raises sea levels. And so specifically in terms of sea ice, when sea ice isn't present, it can increase the waves and the storms beating on the ice shelves, and this can increase how quickly the ice shelves break away, and thus this can increase the land ice sliding into the ocean and raising sea levels. Another really important way in which the ice shelves melt faster is through a warming ocean underneath the ice shelves. And it's a complicated system considering the circulation of the ocean in these very high latitude regions, but how the sea ice interacts with the ocean circulation and influences how much warm water gets beneath the shelves is another important thing to consider. There's sort of not one clear way that it influences the melting, but changes occurring in the high latitude system all need to be considered.
We have science showing that the state of sea ice in the Arctic can affect weather, including rainfall, further south. Is that the case for Antarctica? Does sea ice decline affect weather, say, in Australia, New Zealand, or South America?
Oh, that's a really good question, Alex. I think there's a lot less known about the influence of Antarctic sea ice coverage on Southern Hemisphere weather patterns compared to the Arctic. There have been some studies that have shown that quite sort of substantial changes in the sea ice over the Southern Ocean can change one of the modes of climate variability called the Southern Annular Mode, or the SAM, which describes the circumpolar westerly winds that blow over the Southern Ocean, and they can move north or south as a sort of mode of variability. So some studies have suggested that sort of overall sea ice coverage can affect the SAM, and the SAM itself can affect rainfall and temperature across the Southern Hemisphere inhabited continents, so Australia and South America and Africa. But I haven't really seen this play out sort of in a more weather-type context. These are sort of more longer-term climate studies. Antarctica can have an important influence on the weather in Australia, for example, but I think there's still a lot of unanswered questions about the role of sea ice in influencing weather in the sort of regions north of Antarctica.
Recently, you were part of a team of scientists trying to understand the future of sea ice and ice shelves around Antarctica. Your team looked at another driver, the ocean heat system known as El Niño or La Niña, technically called ENSO. The paper, published February 20th, 2023, is titled Antarctic Shelf Ocean Warming and Sea Ice Melt Affected by Projected El Niño Changes. Now, before we get to the results from your group's latest study, there is something strange. In the Northern Hemisphere, the deeper you go, the colder it gets, but not in the Southern Ocean?
That is a really interesting thing, Alex. So there's sort of much of the Southern Ocean, the northern part, the ocean, you know, just to the south of Australia. It is, as you described, in the Northern Hemisphere, warm waters at the surface and then cooler waters as you go deeper down in the ocean. But at the high latitudes, so around the Antarctic margins, we have the opposite. We actually have colder water at the surface and warmer water it gets. And this might seem a little bit confusing because, you know, like air, we know that warm air rises. We can expect that warm water should also rise to the top. It should be less dense and it should be sitting on the top of the ocean. But in the Southern Ocean, we have these competing influences of the temperature of the ocean and the salinity of the ocean. And we actually find in that high-latitude Southern Ocean that it's the salinity that really controls how the ocean is stratified. And so we have this cold and fresher water at the surface of the Southern Ocean and this warmer water at depth. And this is important for a couple of reasons. It means that if more or less warm water from the subsurface is upwelled to the surface, it can actually cause a surface warming. And so this can be sort of surprising. You think, more water coming from the depth, you would initially think that it would be colder, but it's not. It's warmer, so it can cause a surface warming. And it's also important because ice shelves, the big bits of ice that were on land but are now floating on the ocean, they can actually be quite thick. And so the ice shelves, the base of the ice shelves where they come into contact with the ocean can be, for example, 400 metres below the surface, and they're in contact with the sort of warmer subsurface layer, not the cold surface layer. And so this temperature of this layer can be important in melting the ice shelves, and changes in that can be really sort of what sort of determines an increase in the rate of melting of the ice shelves.
What is the science behind predictions that we will have more hot El Niño events in the future?
El Niño and La Niña, which are collectively termed the El Niño Southern Oscillation, or ENSO, have a huge role on global climate. It's the largest mode of climate variability, and it affects climate in all regions of the world in different ways. And climate models project that as the mean climate warms due to increasing emissions of greenhouse gases, there'll be an increase in ENSO variability. And so what this means is that there will be more extreme El Niños and there will be more extreme La Niñas in the future as the climate warms. And this happens because as we have a warming atmosphere, because we're increasing the concentration of greenhouse gases, it warms the surface layer of the equatorial Pacific Ocean. And this surface layer is warmed more quickly than below. We're back in the equator where the surface layer is the warmest layer of the ocean and below that is a cooler layer of the ocean. And so we have a warmer surface layer, and also under a warming climate, we have more rainfall, and this freshens the surface layer. And this, what this does is it increases the stratification of the equatorial Pacific Ocean. And so it means that the surface layer of the ocean is not sort of connecting with the subsurface layer of the ocean as much as it does under sort of current conditions or historical climate conditions. And what's really remarkable about ENSO is that it's a really coupled phenomena. So it involves the atmosphere and the ocean really coupling together. And when we have this more strongly stratified equatorial Pacific Ocean because of global warming, it actually increases the ability of this surface layer of the ocean to couple with the atmosphere. And this means that sort of this coupling gets stronger. And for a given wind forcing, the ocean can respond in a stronger manner. And this essentially increases the occurrence of strong El Niño events and strong La Niña events. So under global warming, we have an increase in ENSO variability in both El Nino and La Nina events.
Starting in 2014, Dr. Wenju Chai of the government science agency CISRO first published his findings of increasing frequency of extreme El Nino events due to greenhouse warming. And simply put, Dr. Chai is a powerhouse researcher in this field. He's been publishing for the past 25 years. He led this recent study. How did you get involved, Ariane?
Yeah, that's a good question, Alex. So I work with Chai at CSIRO for a couple of years, and I also did my PhD sitting at CSIRO with Chai as my supervisor there and also a university supervisor. And you're right, Chai is he's a world expert at understanding projected changes in El Nino and La Nina. And much of his work utilizes coupled climate model output. And this coupled climate model output is something that I also use a lot in my research, which largely focuses on the Southern Ocean. Because of this recent study looking at, you know, the influence of El Niño and La Niña on the Southern Ocean, Chai got in touch with me about getting involved in this study and sort of really looking at the influence around the Antarctic margins of these changes in the tropical Pacific.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
El Niño is the most extreme state of the Pacific cycle, called ENSO. If the number of El Niño years doubles as we heat the planet, what impact does that have on Australia, which has already been slammed with years of extreme weather? I know this isn't your specialty, but you must have heard something about this.
You're right in that this isn't my area of expertise, but El Niños and La Niñas have a strong influence on Australian rainfall. And typically across eastern Australia, which is where much of the population and the agriculture in Australia is, El Niños tend to be associated with lower rainfall and drought, and La Niñas tend to be associated with higher rainfall, and in the case of the past 3 years, we've had quite a lot of flooding here. And so while this is beyond my area of expertise, we could suggest that if we have an increased frequency in extreme El Niño and La Niña events, we might be experiencing stronger extreme rainfall and drought years across eastern Australia.
Yes, from what I've seen, you could be going from flood to fire and back again in different years. Could you describe the processes where an El Niño taking place far away in the Pacific could hasten ice shelf melt?
Yeah, okay. That's a good question because it can seem quite complicated. There's sort of actually two different mechanisms by which this can happen, and I'll explain both of them because one of them sort of seems a little bit more tangible. And so when we have an El Niño event, so we have a really warm eastern equatorial Pacific, this changes sort of the atmospheric convection. And this sets off planet-wide waves in the atmosphere, and it can affect climate in a lot of different regions. And so what I'm most familiar with is rainfall across eastern Australia, for example. But it also sort of sets off this wave that influences the circulation in the southern Pacific Ocean near Antarctica in a region called the Amundsen Sea. And so El Niño tends to be associated with a weakened Amundsen Sea low circulation, and conversely, La Niña tends to be associated with a strengthened Amundsen Sea low circulation. So this can really affect the winds sort of in this sector of Antarctica. But more broadly than just that, El Niño can actually affect the hemispheric circulation around the southern hemisphere. And so El Niño tends to be associated with, I mentioned before, the southern annular mode, or the SAM. El Niño tends to be associated with a negative SAM or SAM-like wind patterns. And so the westerly winds over the Southern Ocean tend to weaken and shift north, whereas La Niña tends to be associated with a positive SAM-like wind changes over the Southern Ocean. The winds strengthen and shift south. And these changes in winds that occur both, you know, on a hemispheric level and also more regionally in the Pacific sector in the Amundsen sea low area, these wind changes affect the underlying ocean. So a lot of the ocean circulation is driven by wind. And as you mentioned earlier, the Southern Ocean has this cool water at the surface and this warm water at depth. And changes in the wind can change the ocean circulation, which basically can redistribute the ocean heat. And so in this study led by Chai, what they found was that because we are projecting an increase in ENSO variability over the 21st century, so there'll be more frequent strong El Niño events and more frequent strong La Niña events. But because El Niño and La Niña are not exactly symmetric, we actually get left with a residual El Nino signature in the mean circulation. So we have an El Nino-like pattern. And this changes the ocean circulation in such a way that the warm subsurface waters around Antarctica stay in the subsurface, more so than normal. And what this means is it leads to a relative cooling of the surface ocean. And I use the words relative here carefully, because this is under greenhouse warming. We are still seeing the surface will be warming. We do still see Antarctic sea ice being lost in these climate projections of the 21st century. But the role of these strong El Niños is to slow down the sea ice loss and slow down the surface warming relative to a case without this strong El Niños. And conversely, this warm water, it's kept at depth, and so we actually see an increase in warming of the subsurface. And this is really important for the ice shelves. So this warming happens at levels where the ice shelf cavities are located. And so if we have more warm water being kept at depth, it means that there's more heat available to melt the ice shelves from below. And ultimately, this is important because as the ice shelves melt, their buttressing support is reduced, and this means that the land ice can slide into the ocean more quickly and raise sea levels.
Recent science also predicts the Arctic will become a stormier place, and that can damage sea ice, among other things. The Southern Ocean is already legendary as too stormy for almost any ship. Do you expect there will be more storms in and around Antarctica as the climate heats up?
The Southern Ocean is a really stormy place, as you said, and one of the things that we have seen over the past few decades and that is projected to continue is a positive trend in the southern annular mode. And what this means is that the westerly winds that blow over the Southern Ocean, they've strengthened and they've moved poleward, so they've moved further towards Antarctica. And the storms are tied to these westerly wind jets. And so the storm tracks themselves have also moved further south around Antarctica. But I'm not actually sure about the number of storms, so I can't really comment on that exactly.
We're often told the ocean is absorbing both heat and carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, and the churning Southern Ocean is the largest carbon sink mechanism perhaps on the planet. If sea surface temperatures warm as predicted and El Niños proliferate, could this change the carbon dioxide exchange? And if so, for better or for worse? Do we know yet?
It's a big question, Alex, and there's lots of different components. So I think understanding the ocean's role in carbon uptake is not my area of expertise. So I'm going to give some general comments, but they're cautioned with that. So part of the ocean's role the Southern Ocean's role in uptaking heat and carbon is tied to its sort of mean state circulation. And this is likely to change under future climate because the wind can change this ocean circulation. And so changed winds could cause the ocean to uptake more or less anthropogenic heat and carbon. And what this means for us, we live on the land and in the atmosphere, essentially. If the ocean is taking up less heat and carbon, there will be more in the atmosphere. It will warm faster. If the ocean takes up more heat and carbon, it will sort of dampen the influence of global warming per se, but it will lead to faster sea level rise as the ocean sort of warms up and expands, which is another sea level rise process in addition to the melting ice sheet. And it'll lead to faster ocean acidification. As to what exactly happens, I can't really comment on that clearly today, sorry.
Melting ice from Antarctica could flood world port cities and heavily populated farming deltas, but most of our science and media attention has been on the Arctic, even though Antarctica could flood these places. Why do you think that is, and are we missing one of the most dangerous developing changes?
There's a couple of reasons. I think the first reason is that Antarctica is really far away. It's really far away to us in Australia. It's especially far away to you in Canada, whereas the Arctic is on your doorstep. And so I think it's quite natural in that sense to be focused on something that's happening closer to you. I did my master's at McGill in Montreal, and when I was there, Antarctica seemed, and like it was, the furthest place in the world. And it's hard to keep that at the forefront of your mind a lot of the time. So that's the first thing. And then I think the second thing is that these changes that have occurred in the Arctic have been going on for many decades now. And so they're quite well understood, and we've been seeing sea ice decline across the Arctic, for example. And so scientists have a pretty good understanding of that, and I think this has infiltrated the public's understanding of the science. Whereas changes in the Antarctic have been different. We talked previously about the sea ice, that it increased for about three decades before declining, and changes on the Antarctic continent have also seen sort of differences. So there were some cooling trends on the Antarctic continent for a couple of decades, which have now been understood to be influenced by tropical Pacific variability. Like El Niño and La Niña, the tropical Pacific also exhibits longer-term variability, known as the interdecadal Pacific Oscillation, and that was shown to be influencing temperature on the Antarctic continent. But so, you know, for a couple of decades, the Antarctic continent looked like it was slightly cooling, and it seemed like maybe it might be protected from some of the influences of global warming because it's so remote and because of features of the atmospheric and oceanic circulation. But now that we have more understanding, we can see that these short-term changes were more like variability, and there's signs that Antarctica is not as sort of removed from the influences of global warming as we once thought. The East Antarctic ice sheet was once thought to be quite safe from ice shelf melting, and now we've got evidence to suggest that it is actually starting to melt in East Antarctica too. And this is really important because there's a huge amount of water stored in East Antarctica. And so, yeah, I guess these two reasons, I think, is why there's been less attention on the Antarctic. It's remote for everybody. It's particularly remote for people in the Northern Hemisphere. And we haven't had as clear trends as in the Arctic. There's been large variability in the Antarctic climate system as well. And so we haven't sort of necessarily seen global warming emerging as a driver of climate changes there for as long as the Arctic.
Is there anything else you would like to leave with our listeners as we wrap up here?
What we've discussed today has really highlighted that the Southern Ocean and Antarctica can play a huge role in driving global climate and in driving global sea levels. And so the take-home point overall is that it's really important that we consider changes that are occurring in Antarctica because while they are remote, they can have a strong influence on the globe. And specifically when considering this study led by Chai, you know, we're seeing how changes occurring and projected to occur in the tropical Pacific can influence the Antarctic ice shelves and the Antarctic sea ice. And what this is really telling us is that the global climate system is really complicated. And when we're considering Antarctic climate, we have to consider changes from the tropical Pacific as well as local changes to really understand them. And I guess what happens in Antarctica will affect all of us, particularly through its role in sea level rise. And so it's important that we continue to focus research in this area.
From Monash University and Securing Antarctica's Environmental Future, we've been speaking with postdoc researcher Arian Purek. Find links to all the science we talked about in my show blog at ecoshock.org, published every Wednesday. Arian, thank you for your work and talking with us on Radio EcoShock.
Yep, thanks very much, Alex.
Let your mind stretch around the planet. Become a global citizen, not just in humanity, but within the miracle web of life. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening and caring about our world. Nature calls out from her wounded places. Humans walk about from our walled spaces. In dancing bodies, sparks jump from mind to mind. Hearts open just enough to hear that gathering storm of change. Hearts open to welcome news and prepare for the strange. Serious people gather to talk about air. Antennae sense the waves. Weather wears farmers down. Debt is the new currency. Worry the new anthem. But nature calls out. I was always here. Return to this womb that never dies. Dine in my temple. Find your core. But you can never return to the way that was. You can never return. as temples of power slip beneath the rising sea. You can never return to the way that was. You can never return to the place that was.